встречался с тобой, потерял я покой. В сердце боль и тоска, от любви стал не свой. Ну приди же скорей, стань навеки моей. Я хочу быть с тобой и найду я покой. Пролетели года, но не встретил тебя. В моем сердце костер не угас до сих пор. Я мечтаю о том и уверен в одном.
Good morning. This is Hour of the Wolf, a weekly program dedicated to science fiction, fantasy, enchantment, and the imagination. My name is Jim Freund. With us this morning, writer, editor, poet, publisher, bon vivant, Gordon Linsner. If you want to watch, go to my timeline on Facebook Live. If you want to listen, well, you're already there.
I'm Dan Persons, movie reviewer for Hour of the Wolf. My job is to think about how films get made, how they succeed and fail at what they're trying to do. That's why I get paid the big bucks. Ahem. That's not your job. As audience member, you need do nothing more than sit back, let the film wash over you, and hopefully enjoy the experience. And then, afterwards, you listen to my review, or you think back on what I said if you heard the review before seeing the film, and you go, huh, that gives me a whole new perspective on what I've seen. Or you go Dan's Full of Manure. That's fair as well, as long as it gets you thinking more fully about what you experienced and how you feel about it. My job is done then. In the new Wes Anderson stop-motion animated film Isle of Dogs, in which all the dogs of a large Japanese metropolis, who talk in this film with the voices of, among others, Bryan Cranston, Edward Norton, Scarlett Johansson, and Harvey Keitel, are exiled to a quote-unquote garbage island, and a young boy ventures to that island to search for his beloved pet, there are moments when characters will turn to look into the camera. This happens a lot. Sometimes this is styled as typical behavior, a dog being briefly distracted by some noise or other stimulus. Just as frequently, it's done as an overt breaking of the fourth wall. The effect is the same in either case. The audience becomes aware of the presence of the camera, the nature of film. In one sequence, we watch as an elaborate meal of sushi is prepared. The various raw and somewhat dismaying ingredients, a whole fish and octopus tentacle, being transformed into beautiful, abstract shapes. The sequence calls attention to the natural being transformed into art, the process further abstracted by the nature of stop-motion animation. I don't think this is by accident. I think Anderson is deliberately calling attention to his process. It's been there in his live-action films, all those self-conscious, symmetrically arranged tableaus, the lateral tracking shots, the formality of the acting, and it's doubly, maybe trebly so in his animated films, where everything can be stylized and stage-managed to the nth degree. I had been puzzling over why the film is set in Japan until I landed on the blatantly obvious fact that Japanese culture is grounded on a formalized stylization, from kabuki to manga to anime. If it was just stylization, it would be annoying. We have no shortage of films that are ravishing to behold, but that then think that that's all that's needed. Anderson's gift is to make us care about the characters moving within these formalized environments, particularly children. And the kids of Isle of Dogs, similar to kids in other Anderson films, carry themselves with an unchildlike dignity, but also harbor the intensity and sincerity that's only found in those who have yet to be overwhelmed by the demands of adulthood. There's a refreshing lack of irony in how these characters are portrayed. The boy, Atari, voiced by Koyu Rankin, speaks in untranslated, unsubtitled Japanese, yet we understand implicitly the earnestness of his words. A crusading adolescent journalist whose head is framed with an epic halo of frizzy hair, voiced by Greta Gerwig, storms through the story with a bracing intensity typical of Anderson's younger female characters. Wes Anderson's overt artificiality frequently trips me up. There's a part of me that struggles against a style that so blatantly calls attention to itself. But I can't argue that I don't enjoy the look and the outlook of his films, or regret the trips he takes us on. Isle of Dogs is beautiful to behold, quirky in its conceits, and just a wonderful experience. For Hour of the Wolf, I'm Dan Persons, hashtag ITMFA.
And let me, first of all, thank you, Dan. And let me add to that that I am not like a number one Wes Anderson fanatic. There are those people that anything Wes Anderson has done is fabulous. And when I went to see that movie from where we are, the local cinema, it's about five blocks from here, right near Junior's, they had a whole short subject on Wes Anderson, and you could see just how fanatical they were about his films. And the first one I saw was The Fantastic Mr. Fox, which is also stop-motion animation. It's worth noting that Isle of Dogs is his second animated film. And I loved it. It was very different. I'm a big fan of stop-motion. And then I saw Moonrise Kingdom, and I began only two films in. And you could already see, yes, this guy has a style. that there was actually a great deal of similarity between this guy's live action and stop motion. So, yes, there is such a thing. Then, I don't remember which film it was. It might have been the Steve Zissou movie. I can say it's one with Bill Murray in it, but you see, Wes Anderson has never made a movie without Bill Murray. So, yeah, that doesn't really pin it down a great deal. So suffice it to say that, I saw Moonrise Kingdom and I loved it. It's the same kind of film in its way as Isle of Dogs. And even though it's live action, it's every bit as artificial in its way and delightful. So let me just say that while Isle of Dogs is still... Oh, here's an important point. See Isle of Dogs on a big screen. I'm guessing Dan did not. There are so many what they like to call Easter eggs in the film because the dogs are all living on this isle, which is, by the way, in the shape of a hand. You start at the... at the wrist, you go to the knuckles, and the end of the island, the place that they're trying to reach in their quest, is the cuticle, and which is a very cuticle way of looking. And the what point was I going to make about that? Yes, there's garbage everywhere. So if you look carefully, you will see things that Wally discarded. So there's a lot of that kind of little winks and tips, including his own films, but including a lot of other films that Anderson enjoys, and he's a film fanatic. So for that reason, I really do recommend big screen, because otherwise you're going to have to do the stop motion thing when the Blu-ray comes out, and it may not work for you. Before we get to show proper, announcements time. May Day, by which I mean May 1st. The New York Review of Science Fiction Readings, our next one. We were originally going to be doing a tribute of sorts. But the people tributing are not able to make it to New York. So we have switched courses and we are instead presenting people that, well, are totally equally worthy. And, I see I should have written this down. I haven't even gotten the web page up yet to announce it. But Ilana C. Meyer, whose new book from Tor has been getting rave notices in places where they choose to notice various science fiction works and getting accolades everywhere. This is her second novel, first one in 5 years. She will be one of our two readers. And the other is a Canadian writer, poet, critic, and all kinds of stuff, Jo Walton. That's J-O. This is a woman. And she is brilliant and wonderful. Starlings, I think, was her latest work. She writes reviews for, among other places, the New York Review of Science Fiction. But you see, the readings that I produce really have little or nothing to do with the magazine. So it's a happy coincidence that somebody affiliated with the magazine will be reading at the series. So that's May 1st, May Day, 388 Atlantic Avenue. Admission is free, and we will sob if you don't give a donation on the way in, unless you just can't afford it. If you can't afford it, you are most welcome anyway. We have never turned away anybody for lack of funds. I've been there, done that. So be there. More information will be coming your way soon. If you would like to watch this radio show in progress, at least you'll get to see our guest, Gordon Linsner. Go to my timeline on Facebook, to Jim Freund. I don't know how to get this started from the Hour of the Wolf group page. Also, I have like 2,000, quote, friends, end quote, which will reach that, you know, many more people than in the group, which has like 400 people or something like that. And I want the announcement to go out to as many folk as possible. If, by the way, we go off air and on air on the Facebook Live, I see that the BAI Wi-Fi signal on which we depend to send this out, there's a technical term that I'm trying to think of. Ah, yes, it sucks. That was the technical term. And I see that the feed is wobbling in and out. I hope it's not necessarily disconnecting people, although I'm aware of the fact it sometimes does that. The good news is that we're going to be giving the room in which we are currently sitting some kind of a makeover. An actual broadcast console will be coming in, a phone system that takes more than one call at a time, and a built-in Wi-Fi and internet infrastructure that will vastly improve both our broadcast signal and our internet signal. And we're going to be leaving the Empire State Building. This is a cause for great cheer. We are currently paying over $65,000 a month for rent on that. We haven't been able to pay that a long time. We lost a court case. Pacifica took out a loan of $2 million against the KPFA building to cover that. And then some nonprofit in New York negotiated another deal with the Empire State people, and we're paying a very different price, lower price, to get out of there. So sometime relatively soon, we are going to be switching. I think we'll still be at 99.5 FM. I am not sure if we'll be at 50,000 watts. Don't care. Internet carries the signal as well. The broadcast is important, so we can take listener calls and send that signal out live through the internet on an interactive basis. You can't do that without a radio transmitter. And people say, oh yeah, I know people that take calls. No, they don't. Not live. If they are live, it's they've told people, oh, we're going to be on the air from this time to that, but they can't actually hear the show and respond to what people say. And I've had dozens of people say, oh, I know people that do. And, you know, I will give a bounty to anybody who can prove otherwise. Yes, a package of paper towels will be your bounty. So so that's all good news. Other announcements, upcoming shows. Then we get to this week's show. Next week on the air, somebody who sold his fifth story ever to this week's guest. Let's see if this week's guest can suss it out. And the only novel he has ever written was published by this week's guest. So, Gordon, tell me who next week's guest will be.
I'm guessing the initials are S.E.?
Yes, yes, they are.
Scott Edelman, of course.
Scott Edelman will be here. Right. In all these years, the first bleeping time he's going to be on this show. I've recorded him, but, you know, like doing a reading or something. Yeah. One of the best KGB readings was his. I'm not a big fan of horror. He read a zombie story that I swear is just great literature. And he worked for years at Marvel as an editor. He edits Sci-Fi Weekly, I think, for the Syphilis channel, the Sci-Fi channel.
He's got some kind of a podcast called Edie the Fantastic. He
does. I helped him spec out the equipment that he uses. He uses the same audio equipment as I, which he and I had lots of conversations about that. But I've yet to be on his podcast. Hint, Scott. But I did help him set it up. The idea is all his, and it's a great idea. And other people are imitating it now. There's another. They're not literary based, but they're like somebody having lunch with the podcaster. And this is all an imitation. I mean, maybe Jerry Seinfeld with his comedians in cars getting coffee might be a precursor. But I'm not sure that Scott didn't start first. So anyway, Scott Edelman. And since Scott worked at Marvel, oh, they're coming for me. I tell guests, no, we're not soundproofed at all. And there is your proof. No soundproofing. No, just, you know, some other happy event on Atlantic Avenue. So to follow Scott Edelman, somebody else, don't think he's currently at Marvel. Chris Claremont will be the guest. We're going to extend it. We'll be on from midnight to 3. And if you don't know who Chris Claremont is, Google it. That's all. If you want, look under X-Men. But that's just one of God knows how many things. Chris said to me, he did the Nursef reading a week ago, and he said to me that the only Marvel movie that does not have one of his characters in it is Black Panther. There are 18 Marvel movies. Only one did not have a character from Chris Claremont in it. And I said, Guardians of the Galaxy? He said, well, yeah, sure, I created Star-Lord. Like, what? And apparently for some earlier book, he created Peter Quill and Star-Lord. And that book died, as did Guardians, pretty quickly. Before the movie, and so they lifted him out of the one book, and they put him in the new comic book, Guardians of the Galaxy, and therefore, that's one of Chris's characters. So he has his thumbprint, or maybe his middle fingerprint. He's got a fingerprint on every Marvel movie, two current TV series. I only knew about one. I knew about Legion, which I considered to be possibly, arguably, not the best Marvel comic book show on the air, possibly one of the best TV shows currently on the air, period, bar none. This show, with each episode, reaches new heights of videography, cinematography, script writing, thoughts. If you know nothing about the X-Men at all, it doesn't matter. It's peripheral. It's very, very peripheral. He has another series, which I didn't realize, called The Gifted, which he told me about a week ago, and I'm up to the last episode now. It's quite good. It's not as good, but as Gordon pointed out, it's got
the lady from POI.
Amy Acker was... That's right. Yeah, but I stopped watching Person of Interest. Huh. But I think about the time she came on and before Taraja
That's when it started really left. Getting interesting.
This is what I am told, but I maybe I'll give it another chance in the future, but I was bored. I like the actors, I like some of the writing, but it had been getting very, very, very repetitive. And I took it past season 2. I was into the beginning of season 3. And Amy Acker had just shown up at the end of season 2, and then she wasn't in the beginning of season 3.
Well, that's one of the difficulties with doing network shows. They want that procedural feel to it, and so there's a lot of repetition on and on. But eventually it became its own thing, the same way... Lucifer is becoming its own thing now.
Yeah, I haven't watched Lucifer. I will catch up with it at some point. That's one of the lovely things about the modern age of television is you don't have to see it week by week. Right. And when people talk about binging, Binging to me means I'll watch, you know, 13 episodes over the course of a month or two. It's not like, you know, sit there and just let it play. Although with certain shows, I might watch two shows in a night. For example, The Gifted, I've got two episodes left. And I noted that when they were first broadcast, these two episodes last January, they were broadcast together, the last two episodes. So I'm going to do that at some point soon. So, highly recommended. Also, I should do a show sometime soon. I am in the middle of doing what they call cutting the cord. And I will do a whole show on how easy it is getting to cut the cord. You are looking quizzically at me, sir.
I'm just waiting for you to elaborate.
Well, you see, I'd rather not give brand names.
Okay.
But suffice it to say that there is one service. This one is relatively new.
Okay.
From a major purveyor of technology. And they have a service that includes your local channels and most of the cable channels. It has unlimited DVR because everything's in the cloud.
Yeah.
So all you have to say is, add this to my library. And so it's always there. It's, you know, as long as you have an internet signal, you have that. It ties into and combines internet service, television services with broadcast and cable television services, and it's $40 a month for everything that you get from a cable set-top box. And I was waiting for something like this. There have been several services like this, such as Sling and so forth, but they didn't have Turner Classic Movies. And that's the one brand name I will mention. If I don't have Turner Classic Movies, then what's the point? But now I have it. And so we got the service about 5 or 6 weeks ago, and we haven't turned on our cable box since. Haven't had to. There's one major, major thing that's missing, and it's missing from all the internet-based television services. No PBS. Hmm. So I have a feeling that's just a matter of negotiation that's going to come down the line, and we will see where that goes. But they're not going to, PBS is not going to want to be locked out of these other services for long. They have their own service, just like CBS now has, yeah. CBS All Access. I give that another year. There is no need to pay for one network. And PBS is another one network. And it's publicly funded for the most part. So they're withholding their product from a places, plural, that are quite willing to pay for it, thereby maybe reducing pitching days. So it's but a matter of time. I'll tell you the rest off the air. Gordon.
Sounds good to me.
And when I actually do a show, when I know about the other services that are out there, there's about three or four at this point. And when I know more about them, then I will talk about it a little bit more, because I don't want to shill the one service that I chose. It's the right one for me. And there are others that might be better for other people, more kid-oriented, you know, more Nickelodeon kind of materials. Although I have Nick, more importantly, Nick at Night, and so forth. So, so I have to. This also means, though, I'm going to have to find a separate internet service provider. But That's about 40 a month for 200 megabits, which is double the speed I am currently getting, plus the 40 a month for the television. I'm actually getting a lower rate because I signed up early. Then they raised the rates, but I'm grandfathered in. And so it'll be $75 a month. We are currently between our internet and our TV, and we have no premium channels at all, over $150 a month. So that's less than half.
Sounds like a good deal to me.
And no sneaky add-ons. It's just straight out there. And if you do it right, you can skip the commercials. So be very, very quiet. There's actually one service, not this one. There's another service that will automatically identify the commercials and skip them for you.
Nice.
You know, when you've added it to your DVR, just... Mm-hmm. Whereas this one, they give you the same number of commercial breaks, but they only give you 60 seconds of commercials at each break. I like that.
Oh, yeah. By the time you put the mute button on, it's time to turn it off again.
Close to, yeah. Yeah, we've been caught unawares. But what's wonderful, they give you a countdown clock.
Ah.
Right on the screen says, you know, spot one of three, 10 seconds. Spot two of three,
right.
30 seconds. And that's it. So, yeah.
Is there a fast forward option as well? Not yet.
Yes, you can. Well, it's internet.
Yeah.
So it's not just you use your phone or whatever as your remote. And so there's not a button. There's you just, you know. Go on the line on the right. bottom and just go to the point that you want. Although if you do it through a Roku box, which I have, and you can use it, by the way, in lots and lots and lots of platforms. It's on Roku, it's on Chromecast, it's on all these different places. Oh, and by the way, you can use it on six devices for that $40. So on the Roku box, using the Roku control, you can fast forward. But there's really not a lot of need to do that. And also, it's like a 30-second forward button and a 30-second backward button. Yeah. Cool stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Cool stuff. And little alerts, like at one point today, it told me that... there was a launch of a SpaceX rocket in, like, countdown 2 minutes. Click this button to watch the rocket go live. And then later on, second stage departing, click this button. I mean, that's
cool.
That's just cool. It brings back the days of sitting down and watching launches, and it was a non-military thing. It was a satellite searching for exoplanets, or actually it already knows where a lot of the exoplanets are. This is determining whether they have oxygen and water. So in other words, can it sustain life? This is serious stuff.
We may need that very soon.
So somebody says, what are the advantages of Roku just connecting a laptop to a TV screen? Roku gives you the channels. So a laptop does not.
Right.
That's simple. There are some channels you will get. Yes, you can ask questions on Facebook. That one just came through on Facebook. Right. But for the most part, even though I've been filibustering most of this time, we need to pay attention to our guests. Good morning, Gordon.
Good morning. How are you today?
Talkative,
obviously.
Yeah. But I did have a few things to announce, and then I thought I'd cavil over the technology.
Can't blame you for that. It's your show.
Well, for the moment. But so this is what, your like fourth time on the show? Third time?
Fourth, maybe fifth, I'm not sure.
Maybe fifth, yeah.
Well, it's been at least three other times.
Yeah, and
in different locations each time.
Yes, you've been on at least
I've been twice to Wall Street.
Right.
Once at City College.
Right. And now here at 388. Yeah. So, yeah. So out of the five venues that I have worked at.
Right.
Because I started at 39th Street, then the church at 62nd Street, then we moved to Wall Street.
Right.
And by the way, had fun this week. Had lunch with the station manager of WBAI, the one who was station manager when I began in 1967.
So young.
Yeah. Hey, he was in great health. I'm sort of hobbling along. So who am you anyway, for the people who didn't hear those earlier shows?
Who are I be?
Yeah.
Okay. Scott Linz, I was the founder and editor for over 40 years of Space and Time magazine. Hildy Silverman is now handling that job for me. I just do some copy editing and promotion for her once in a while.
Yeah, and that showed up nicely on the screen. Oh,
I could put up both of them. How's that?
Oh, there you go.
Like that's one too?
Yeah.
Okay. I just brought the copies that occasionally I'll give her a story as well.
Yeah.
Although they pay so little, it's hardly worth it. I do some writing. I did more writing back in the 80s and 90s. I'm getting back into it now that I don't have to make a living at it.
Yeah.
Recently.
When you make a living, you do so as a tour guide.
Most of my money comes from tour guiding, yes.
Yeah.
I also do a little bit of like sound work and so on. But that's,
yeah.
You know, I just can't hold down a regular job. What can I tell you? But
more than I've got.
But I've actually had a pretty good year last year. I had about 3 stories sold.
Oh,
getting back into it. One was an anthology called Altered States, which isn't selling very well because it's way overpriced. But it's basically the idea of like, what the U.S. would look like if something different happened in the past.
Oh, who edited that?
It was Glenn Howman.
Oh! Yep. I didn't know about that book.
Oh.
Hmm.
Well, here, I'll give you a brochure.
Yes, absolutely.
Flyer.
It's a lovely idea. But my answer to things of overpriced books, I mean, when Billy Stalling wrote a biography of her father, Will Jenkins,
yeah,
who wrote under the pseudonym Murray Leinster,
right.
I always thought it was Leinster, but no, it's Leinster. He got the pseudonym from Leinster County in Ireland.
Ah.
And you do not go there and say Leinster, or they will call you a crowd or something. It's Leinster. So she wrote a fascinating biography of her father, and it was at half the price it would have been overpriced. It was really intended to sell, as far as the publisher was concerned,
right,
to universities,
right,
libraries, and the stuff. And so she would tell people, how do you read the book? Well, go to a library. Take it out. Maybe they'll buy another copy.
I think one of the problems with this book was published in July of the election year, and we're all trying to think of the most weird thing we could think of to go on, and nobody could.
And
just
reality,
got really weirder than anything in the book.
And reality trumped it.
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
Yeah. And it's a word I usually don't use. Okay, you've also done poetry, have you not?
Not really, no.
Okay, but you've been a major promoter of poetry. You and Mike Allen, I would say, are among the and maybe Bart Lieb, are among the greater promoters of poetry in science fiction for things like the Riesling Award.
Well, I was one of the few publishers that actually would print poetry within the magazines.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think FNSF would do like a poem.
Once in a while.
Yeah. Once in a while, yeah.
Yeah.
But Space and Time always has, and under Hildy, yeah, I believe, continues to.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we prided Space and Time. When I started, it was the idea of like just everything, and particularly things that the regular newsstand magazines weren't doing. Since if you have a science fiction story that doesn't quite fit them, send it to us.
Yeah.
If they said, we don't know what to do with this. We don't know either. Let's publish it.
Yeah. But it's also a good magazine. And it was under your care, and it continues to be with Hildy as editor.
She's very pleased with how she kept it going. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Indeed. She's fascinating. I had at the last Heliosphere, which is a new SF convention in New York.
Yeah, I was there.
Yeah, I know. But I'm telling other
exactly,
people.
Exactly, yeah.
Chuck Gannon, who I've interviewed a few times under really bad circumstances, like once in the middle of the BEA floor, BEA Book Expo of America. That's the Javits Center, you know, surrounded by 20 or 30,000 people. Not the ideal way to do an interview. And one time we set up at a Lunacon, in fact, that I was going to do a, quote, live Hour of the Wolf there, meaning that I was recording. And it turned out to be that somebody on the programming committee said, okay, you can have Chuck Gannon and Hildy Silverman. And I'm thinking, these writers have very different arenas in a way, and neither case do their politics enter their fiction, but they come from very different places, were trained. They are not personally. Let's put it this way. Chuck Gannon's father was a John Bircher. Chuck is not. That's a very, on the other hand, he's not exactly a BAI left winger. So, I would say Hildy is sort of closer to the kind of thinking that one finds in these hallowed halls.
Exactly.
They were fabulous together. They were great. And so at Heliosphere, they wanted to do two things with each guest of honor, Eric Flint and Chuck Gannon. And they asked me to do the two Chuck Gannon ones. And I said, no, the right person is Hildy Silverman. And so she did the Friday interview and I did the Friday evening primetime interview. And I did the Sunday afternoon, early morning. Early morning for me is 11 a.m. It's like...
Yeah, I had one of those, too.
Yeah. And she... Great... The two of them mix perfectly. She did a great job.
Oh, yeah. She's a really impressive writer, too, besides heading a magazine. She... actually, she has a story in the same book I have, the Baker Street Irregulars 2.
Yeah. Here, take your... edited by Michael Ventrella and Jonathan Mayberry, which is pretty.
Yeah,
there we go.
Is that good?
Yes, that's fine.
Okay. Yeah, and I was really impressed. Actually, this was a situation.
By the way, for you radio listeners, we're holding it up to the camera for the Facebook Live.
Yeah. This book is actually coming out formally next week, but you could pre-order it on Amazon now if you want.
Yeah. Yeah, I had to explain that to some people. That
and it's a sequel to the, they did a collection a couple of years ago called Baker Street Irregulars, different variations of Sherlock Holmes.
Mm-hmm.
This one, Mike Ventrella, who was the main editor here, told me there's a lot more variety in this one.
Mm.
That really went off the rails. I particularly like my story, but I also liked Hildy's very much. And I also did some informal editing on it because he sent like pre-copies of the whole book to people to look at it. And I looked at the first story and saw all these mistakes. And I went through that. And said, Mike, you want me to look at the rest of it too? Yeah.
Yeah.
It was only the first story. There was a problem, though. Everything else was, you know, a word here and there.
I get a lot of ARCs, which are advanced reader copies.
Right.
And
like this one.
But from like, I'm talking from Tor or Random
right,
House or
right.
Knopf, you know, the people with slightly larger budgets. And I will find typos.
Yeah.
And I'll let them know. And I've caught ones that they're, once upon a time when I was fairly destitute, I was doing that work for about $5 an hour, copy editing and proofreading, and really upsetting people. Proofreading, they didn't mind. It's like, oh, thank you for catching that.
Right.
But insisting on the... Oxford comma, the what is it, serial comma? The something serial comma.
Yeah.
At any rate. It's not only is it wrong if you don't, there was a court case recently that somebody sued somebody else because they misunderstood something because it was lacking the Oxford comma. And so it said, you know, A comma B and C, not A comma B comma and C. Big, big difference between those. And somebody bought into something, didn't have that required comma, so they sued for the lack of a comma, and they won a reasonable settlement.
Yeah, I'm a little more flexible on that if the context is clear, but in that case, it was obviously wasn't.
Yeah. Well, for me, the context is the grammar correct? If it doesn't have the Oxford serial comma, as most things do not, it is bad grammar. And yes, there are such things. People say, oh, English is a changing language. There are rules.
Yeah, I'm sorry. There's no such word as all right. That's two words.
Yeah, I have encountered that. But you see, that's the kind of thing that can change.
See, that's the kind of thing that gets under my
nerves. Yeah, yeah. It does not bother me when people write okay as O-K-A-Y. It's the letter O, the letter K, both of them capitalized, or it is not okay. And, oh, it's an acronym. And I forget for what. There was an article about it recently. But to spell out O-K-A-Y is to turn an acronym into its own word. The kind of, and that's happened before in English, but for the record, it's not okay. It's not all right either. Well, it's all right if okay, never mind.
Whereas there is such a word as altogether, but the definition is different from altogether.
Yes. Yes.
Okay, this could take up the entire next hour and a half.
Yeah, yeah, yes, it could. And then we could play some Carlin and really have some fun.
Oh, yeah.
Carlin, who would point out that the spelling of his first name never stops. G-O-R-G-O-R-G-N.
Yeah.
I always liked that one. He was very observant about language. Something that WBAI once pointed out. But that's another Supreme Court case. Do you want to chat some more? Do you want to read? Do you want to take listener questions?
Well, at some point I would like to read something since I bothered public printing out all these stories.
Yeah.
Should do one of them. The one I wanted to do, I'm decided, is probably not a good idea because it makes too much background. It's the, I'll give you the background on it. It's basically a Lovecraftian story, but it's set around 1916, involves Aleister Crowley and the Bureau of Investigation, because it wasn't the FBI back then, exploring the Atlantic Avenue Tunnel across the street.
That old trope?
Yeah, that old.
Okay.
Yeah, that old trope. That old tradition thing.
Yeah, right.
And there's like a Cthulhu monster in the basement. But I was having a lot of fun with it because I was also doing callbacks to, like, he's walking by and there's this like shady-looking character sitting on the stoop of 169 Clinton Street, which is where Lovecraft lived. Later on.
Yeah, at one point, yeah.
Yeah. And I got to play with the fact that not many people realize that Crowley was a British spy. He worked for the British Empire, and while he was in New York, his job was to infiltrate the German groups that were here that were trying to keep America out of the war. And one of the things he did was write a lot of that propaganda, which was so over the top, it would make them look stupid.
Mm-hmm.
And the period that I set this in, because I tied it in with a actual investigation that the Bureau did into the tunnel looking for German spies, I mentioned the fact that, you know, like 6 months later, they blew up a ship in New Jersey.
Yeah. There you go.
So I had a lot of fun, like, tying on. Oh, yeah, and the young Al Capone is following him.
Of course.
Yeah. He wasn't involved in the gangs then, but he lived in Brooklyn and was, like, working for Johnny Tardio. I'm getting too technical now, but I was just going to do like the last half.
Well, we're in Brooklyn, so.
Yeah. But looking at it, I have to give like way more background than I would to make it comprehensible. So I'll do one of the shorter ones at some point, unless you want me to do it now.
It's up to you. Want to do it now, it's fine. We might play a cut of music first just to, you know, get you. You didn't bring in a cup of water, did you?
No, I did not.
No, for probably a good thing to have on hand.
Exactly.
As you read. So if you want, we can do a cut of music, or you can start reading, and I can get you some water. Which would you prefer?
I could do a really short one. I have two flash fiction ones.
Okay. And for those watching on Facebook, you're not going to see anything untoward during the flash fiction.
Right.
That's when Lister comes in.
No flashes. But this one's only about 1,000 words, and it's a ghost story inspired by, well, you'll know what it's inspired by when I read it. It's called None So Blind. I didn't kill Grandma on purpose. No, she made my life hell. She was my last living relative. Technically, she killed herself in a way that added to the guilt she constantly laid on me with that accusing look right before saying, "What the hell did you do this time?" No, Grandma, I did not get my parents, your daughter and son-in-law, killed in the fire that scarred half my body and cost me an eye. No, I cannot find a decent paying job between my scars and your continual reinforcement of my trauma. Would I live here with you otherwise? No, I did not deliberately let your dog slip his leash to get run over by that civic. She made the fatal error, playing the chastisement card again at the top of the cellar stairs. Her narrowing eyes told me she was about to repeat those dreaded words. I turned away quickly. Too quickly. Damaged nerves and muscles made me clumsy. I swung to my blind side. My elbow hit her. She spun sideways. Her knees gave way, and her frail form sailed down over those steps. I heard her skull crack against concrete. I still hear that sound sometimes. Everybody ruled it a tragic accident, the EMS team, the police, her lawyer. It was not unusual for a woman in her early 90s to lose her balance. Totally understandable that a middle-aged half-blind man in constant pain from neurological damage could not react in time to save her. I could finally have put all that guilt behind me if only the damn woman hadn't kept coming back, accusing me with her glowing eyes while I'm watching television, playing computer games, microwaving dinner, taking a shower. Hey, a little privacy, okay? I spelled out okay. I'd shut my eyes, but she was still there when I reopened them, hands raised in anger. One needn't be a lip reader to know what she was saying. What the hell did you do this time? Holding my good eye motionless blinded me. Reflexes kept it from remaining still, though, for more than a few seconds. I tried an eye patch. The strap irritated my raw scalp. The only option I imagined was removing my good eye, but no doctor would do that without a life-threatening reason, and doing it myself would worsen my already notorious reputation for instability. I'd end up institutionalized and destitute. Also, it would hurt like hell. Grandma's spirit stayed around the house, so I had some escape. But I couldn't constantly hang out with the few friends my appearance hadn't driven away. I'd have lost them, especially if I tried explaining what was going on. Her will left me trapped. An incontestable clause insisted I stay in her home, living expenses covered by a minimal stipend from some IRAs I hadn't known about. If I moved, I lost everything. If I was relocated to a separate living facility, I lost everything. If the house burned down or was condemned, well, you get the idea. One day, sitting on the living room couch, hunched over the laptop on the coffee table, leaning close to the screen to block Grandma from my remaining peripheral vision, skimming through news feeds I had no interest in, I found a reference to a solar eclipse the following month. I knew of the event, considered irrelevant like everything else in the world. As I scrolled photos and charts, however, an article caught my attention. A list of precautions for viewers. That planted the seed. Over the following weeks, I activated my laptop speaker translation and voice recognition apps and purchased a keyboard with raised letters. I found the cane I used my first weeks out of the hospital and practiced walking with it again. Neighbors thought I'd relapsed. I brought my collection of mysteries to a local used bookstore, exchanging them for audio versions. I renewed my public library card. I downloaded every piece of music I could onto the laptop, signed up for unlimited access to more. Kitchen cabinets were reorganized, their contents locations memorized. When the day came, I stared at the eclipsing sun, using eye drops to dilate my pupils. It was beautiful and uncomfortable at first, almost painful, but then it just was. Initial results were disappointing. Aside from some tears and blurriness, my vision seemed unimpaired. Ah, but in the morning, I stared into the bathroom mirror at a featureless blur. I looked at the newspaper and saw no words. Grandma's ghost was a fuzzy image, blending into the background. Unless I turned my head. Enough peripheral vision remained to let me plainly see Grandma to the side, hands outstretched in her usual berating pose. The optometrist chastised my idiocy, but was cautiously optimistic. Unfortunately, he was right. By week's end, my eyes began to heal. Grandma's blustering shape appeared wherever I looked. The haunting was more horrific for that brief respite. I upped my game, setting a lawn chair on the back porch, facing south. In the attic, I found my grandfather's binoculars. 3 days later, it was cloudy that week. I finally destroyed my retina beyond recovery. The doctors confirmed my stupidity. Better they believe that than think me a suicidal lunatic. The cab driver helped me to my door and asked if I needed anything else. I assured her I was fine, listened to her drive off. Totally blind, I grew more aware of sounds I'd barely noticed before. I sank onto the couch with a sigh. Ah, peace at last. On the side table, I placed a bottle of whiskey and a tumbler. I poured a glass to celebrate, hanging my thumb over the rim to prevent spillage. Audiobook discs were stacked beside the laptop on the coffee table. I inserted my favorite Michael Connelly novel into the drive, slipped on the headphones, told the computer to play. The first words, however, chilled my soul. They were not from the book. What the hell did you do this time?
Change up the only when you look into the sun, look for the pleasures in anyone. Oh, was it better than to run and to spend the summer singing? And summer could have come in a day. So when you look into the sun and see the words you could have sung, it's not too late, only begun. Look into the sun.
Jethro Tull, Look Into the Sun. And this is WBAI in New York City, listener-sponsored non-commercial Pacifica Radio, broadcasting at 99.5 FM, webcasting over WBAI.org, and at the moment, video casting over Facebook Live. My name is Jim Freund. With me is Gordon Linsner. And you see, I mentioned Facebook Live. I look, I see comments. And somebody gave me his first name. Of course, Alan Zimmerman. Alan Zimmerman. That was it. It was a lovely store and a very... He got the location on very West Chambers Street because he knew that Stuyvesant High School was going to relocate
exactly
nearby. And they did, but not in time for him to have finished paying off the rent hikes and all that. So he closed temporarily. He was going to reopen, and unfortunately fate took his took things into its own hands.
Right.
In the meantime. So I'm not sure that I mentioned, but my name is Jim Freund. With me is Gordon Linsner. There we are.
There we are.
Yes. So for a moment there, it wasn't just me, right? It was pouring, wasn't it?
What, outside?
Yes. Didn't you hear all the sound on the roof?
Well, I was concentrating on my story, but...
No, during the song.
Oh.
I mean, a minute ago. Oh. 60 seconds ago.
Okay. I think the earphones kind of blocked that out from me. I'm not used to...
No, I'm wearing headphones, too.
Yeah. I might have decided this was background for the music. I wasn't...
Okay, let's see.
It was supposed to rain.
Hold on for a second. Yeah. Tell me you don't hear that. Even with your headphones.
Okay, I'm
hearing it
now.
It's pouring. Weather report from WBAI, it's effing pouring.
It was supposed to rain around 1 o'clock this morning.
Well, it's 2 o'clock, so they're on Eastern Standard Time.
It's about.
We're on daylight time here.
That's right.
And in the middle of the night, we're on daylight time because this is because we were looking into the sun during that story.
That's right. Could be any time.
Yes, we don't know. Indeed. Rain is rain. So that's a cute story.
Thank you.
So anything? That's not the kind of story that was inspired by anything other than the story that it was, I assume. It's not like...
Something happened during the last year that kind of inspired it.
Oh, really?
The eclipse.
Well, okay.
Yeah.
Wasn't much of an eclipse here.
No. But all those dire warnings. So what if somebody thought that was a good idea?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, there are. That does happen. That does happen. Yeah. I always did it, but I've done all the things that it takes to look at an eclipse safely. And I have to say, at a certain, you know, unless it's a total eclipse,
yeah,
and you get to see the corona and all that, they're rather unimpressive.
I know. I did go out with the super dark glasses during the eclipse and look up and like, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like an eclipse of the moon where you actually see the shadow.
Yeah. Yeah. Lunar eclipses I like.
Yeah.
That's very dramatic.
They also last a lot longer.
Yeah. The thing about a solar eclipse, and this I did notice and barely notice during, is that it sort of goes to a twilighty kind of color. Things that would normally be, well, let's call them in living color, take on sort of a greenish hue, a greenish purple hue during, when you're at like 60%, which is, I think, about as much as New York got, if that much.
Yeah.
So there was a slight change in the light, and the clouds were pretty.
Yeah.
That was it.
And there was a little... in the ambiance, the atmosphere, there was a slight change. Like it felt like, maybe just a little bit cooler. We weren't getting the exact sunlight, but then again, it was cloudy as well.
So it was cloudy as well.
The best way to observe it was when the clouds passed in front of the sun, and then you could actually see something was happening.
Yeah, but the thing is, I wonder about that because the actual eclipse part in New York was a portion of the sun getting a bit lighter, darker, that is, for about 30 minutes. How much temperature difference is that going to make?
I think it was more of a psychological thing.
Yes, exactly.
But also, you maybe notice the wind a little more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that could be. Exactly. But
I mean, it wasn't enough to feel uncomfortable with. Just felt like there was something different.
Yeah, instead I went back indoors and watched the eclipse
online. Yeah,
online and on TV, and there you could see the totality, and you could see the wedding ring. I think it's called, and that's thrilling.
Yeah, I did. I saw that. I did see that too. And of course, with our technology, you can always like replay it over and over again too.
Yeah. Yeah, only they had a tendency to not show it in real time. And it's much more fun.
Oh, yeah.
To watch stuff in real time. It's like my very favorite TV show. The only reality show I watch. Not the only reality show. There are a few bird cams I follow. Mostly run by Cornell University Lab of Ornithology. But my favorite TV show... available through YouTube. It's called Safari Live. Mm-hmm. And it's on right now. It's on YouTube. And you can watch it. And right now it's dawn, a little past dawn, about an hour past dawn in South Africa in the Sabi Sands off the Kruger National Park. And they're driving around looking at big cats and elephants and things like that there. And... that's reality television. I'm missing it on Wednesday nights. When I get home, I could watch it. Every episode is archived, but it's not live. So I don't bother.
Yeah.
I don't need to see the recap. And in fact, starting a new show of recaps called, the show's called Safari Live. Since it's totally non-commercial, by the way, I have no problems promoting the show ethically. So the recap show will be called Safari Lives. That's cute. That's cute. But 6 hours a day, by the way, people. This show is on 6 bleeping hours a day during the Great Migration in the Masai Mara. They have a tendency to go 7 hours a day because they blend in between a feed from Kenya and a feed from South Africa. Mm. And they're moving into some other countries as well. I'm not quite sure how they're funded. I know that to an extent National Geographic is involved, but they don't advertise. So there's no advertisement, there's no underwriting that is visible. Just and that's reality TV. And you always get people saying, you can talk to them online, just like people can talk to us online here. And people type in, this is a recording, signed special one. And so the presenter, they usually have 3 presenters show, will look at the camera and say, "Hello, special one. Today's date is August 16th. The time, Central Africa time, otherwise known appropriately as cat."
Yeah.
It really is befitting with a leopard on screen. And all that. So it's that's enough. I am overly enthusiastic about this show and drive people to distraction about it.
Just think it might try to promote tourism there, and that, well, that's in itself would be they're being funded by the tourism board.
Well, that's much of it. That's much of it, because to go to one of the lodges where they have specialty chefs, and your bacon is made from the wild boars, not boars, warthogs. The problem is now that I've seen so many real warthogs. They're cute.
Yeah.
Did you know that? Have you ever looked at warthogs? I mean, actually looked at them? They're these mustaches and those little tusks, and they live in termite mounds and just sort of stare out at you, and then they, like, run across the street with all their little piglets.
Best thing I remember warthogs is the R. Crumb character.
Gilbert Shelton.
David Shelton, I'm sorry.
Gilbert Shelton. Wonder Warthog.
Wonder Warthog.
Yeah. I'm not a comics expert, as people will find out when in the next 2 shows I have people from Marvel on the air, although they're both prose writers as well. But I can prove that I know bupkis about comics. But bring up Gilbert Shelton, Fat Freddy's Cat, and especially Wonder Warthog, and I know my stuff. I can tell you which kitchen sink issue it was in. And I still have some of those in my collection. I have very few comics.
I'm surprised a lot of those haven't been reprinted. Or have they?
Yeah, no, I'm not aware. I have not seen them available. I don't know.
I hope it's not just a rights issue. Maybe they're just like, just waiting for somebody to say, hey.
Well, as far as I know, Gilbert Shelton is around.
Yeah.
So he would own the rights. He could resell it.
He wouldn't mind making a few extra dollars off it.
Yeah, I would think. There are people who used to be such a big deal, especially in fandom. Yes, the Hog of Steel.
Yes.
I mean, that tells you, folks, just the level of Wonder Warthog, the Hog of Steel. Just absolutely brilliant stuff. Well, it's on eBay. Let's see. Boing Boing wrote about it 4 years ago. You know, so I am not seeing, there's no Amazon listing. There are people talking about it on YouTube, right next to clips from Safari Live of real warthogs on YouTube. So, yeah, it definitely seems to be out of print altogether, and I don't know why. It's a good question. As are, you know, Fat Freddy's Cat, which actually made it overground. It was syndicated. It was in the Daily News for a while. But Shelton couldn't keep, you know, his joint jokes out forever.
Yeah.
And not to mention litter pan humor and stuff like that. So it only went so far. But there's, yeah, I can't imagine that nobody has ever done the Fabulous Furry Freak Brothers or okay, you know, I'm giving this away to somebody at Amazon or Netflix or something. Live action version of the Fabulous Furry Freak Brothers. Okay,
oh, here we go.
Forget Cheech and Chong and all that. You know, write this damn thing. I'll tell you who ought to do it. Max Landis. If he isn't being blackballed, and I think he is, because he was after Blink, which I did not think sucked, but everybody hated it, except me. And actually, most people I spoke to who saw it said, oh, that really wasn't so bad. Why did they make such a big deal out of it? But he did such a brilliant job on Dirk Gently's Holistic Detective Agency as a TV series. He did a brilliant job on that on BBC America.
Yeah.
And they canceled it after two seasons. And somebody told me, I know not whether this is true, that it was a Me Too situation. And all of a sudden, this is one of the most prolific script writers around. All of a sudden, I'm not seeing that much from him. But I would, assuming that he is ethically okay.
Yeah.
I want season 3 of Dirk Gently. I thought it was great. And I don't care about Blink 2, but I want to see other scripts from him. And he would be the right person. Yeah. I mean, his father's John Landis.
Yeah.
Was practically.
Well, he certainly did a better job of promoting an alternate dimension where magic works than The Magicians does.
No, I don't know about that. First of all, I love The Magicians. I think that's another really fine TV show. And don't forget, Lev Grossman lives right near here. So be nice. Although, yeah, you know, his name's on there since he wrote the novels. And so his name's on there as a producer. And I asked him about that. It was in that room right over there. I asked him about it, and I said, so how much work do you do? And he said, they sent me an email about once a month telling me very little. And I sent back saying, sounds good.
Yeah.
I was let down by the finale of the third season, but I'm very glad that there will be a fourth season. And have you read the books?
I haven't read the book. I kind of gave up halfway through this season. I just didn't like any of the characters. They weren't working for me.
No.
Not that I don't enjoy shows with unlikable characters, but none of them seemed to grip me. That's just personal choice, I guess.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. But there have certainly been episodes which were less than ideal, but then there were a couple of episodes where, like last night's episode of Legion, episode 11, or I think it's actually season 2, episode 3, but chapter 11 is how it is subtitled. That 1 hour of television, I think, ranks with some of the best television ever produced, period, bar none, any country. Amazing stuff, amazing stuff. Visually, contextually, and all that.
It's certainly high on the list of one of my favorite series, so.
Yeah. I'll basically watch anything Noah Hawley produces. Yeah. which is three seasons of Fargo,
right.
Now two seasons of Legion,
right.
And don't know what's next. I'm sort of hoping for season four of Fargo and then a return to Legion.
Yeah.
But he may do something new. He's also writing books.
Yeah.
He's a busy lad.
It's nice to have that vision.
Yeah. So, have you ever written with the idea of, hey, this could be adapted or this could be a play or something in mind?
I tend not to lean towards that. I might think of, while I'm writing it, that it could be adaptive. If you're thinking in terms of a different genre, if you're writing something and you're thinking in terms of television or movies or even a comic strip.
Or a play.
It kind of like takes away from the format you're working in right now.
Yeah, that's actually one of the objections some of my listeners have had to the Facebook Live. Is that I wasn't paying enough attention to the radio.
Oh.
And this is a radio show, and I think he was quite right about that. On the other hand, there's so much benefit to the Facebook Live things, I'm not giving them up.
Well, it's also, I mean, for a radio drama is a much different animal than a screenplay or a TV drama.
Mm-hmm. Better special effects.
Right.
For one thing.
Cheaper special effects.
Yes.
But then you also have to have the actors that are convincing you. You know, if you were right. So it's we back in the 60s, we lost that. When they stopped doing regular radio shows in America.
We still do them. We at Pacifica Radio.
But I mean, as far as like, you know, generally where the whole country can hear them and so on. They still, it's not like, you know, you're turning into the shadow every week. But BBC is still has never let that go.
No, BBC never stopped. The IBC, which is the Australian, the CBC, with Nalo Hopkinson for quite a while being the editor of their radio dramas. Before that, it was Judith Merrill.
Yeah.
So they've never stopped either. It's really only in this country, but Baird Searles kept alive the tradition here at WBAI. And Anthony Boucher was doing his work at KPFA, along with Richard Lupoff, who's better known as a fan, but he's known to the radio audience. And Max Schmid works with the Gotham Radio Players here in New York. And they still do events. We don't have the studios at this time to be producing radio drama, but you know, if the station crawls back out of the hole it's dug itself, and unbelievably we are doing that, we are managing to do that slowly but surely, the we're getting out of that abyss. We will have radio dramas in the future, very much so. And I've got scripts from great writers. And I own the rights to some very major writers. But they will probably end up, if I can find... I can actually get the funding. I need the facilities for some audiobooks. Hmm. I've already put out two. One of which is just me. So that thing... By the way, available online, and it's called Chatting Science Fiction.
There you go.
You just go to your preferred audiobook seller online. There are several, and you can find it. It's Chatting Science Fiction, produced by Skyboat Media, published by Blackstone Audio, and Google them, and you can find me.
There you go.
And I'm shocked that it sold copies. Absolutely. I've gotten four residual checks.
Nice.
I was just happy to have product.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, they're not big residual checks, believe me. You know, not enough to make a dent in my tax return, but...
No, you buy an occasional glass of bourbon or...
Yeah, yes, glass of bourbon is right. Yeah. Not bottle.
Not the really, you know, $300 bottle.
But no. No, actually, get a nice $40, you know. Yeah. Anyway, and I did an audio book of Elysium by Jennifer Brissett.
Actually, I was there earlier today at the KGB where they had the Fantastic Fiction thing and wound up talking at dinner afterwards to one of the editors from Pseudopod, which does a lot of the audiobooks. Well, they're almost
exclusive. They don't do audiobooks.
They do audio readings.
They do some readings.
Yeah.
Yes, with all due respect, at Lightspeed
they do
Magazine
short stories,
and Nightmare, where I do 3 short stories every 2 weeks. We won the Hugo twice. And tomorrow, actually by now it should be live, The Elephant's Crematorium is a really, by Timothy Mudy, as read by, we have a new reader, Pam McNamara. And all of our people are SAG-AFTRA. It's Stefan Rudnicki and Gabrielle DeCure produce the readings out in California. They send them to me. I do the editing, and I host Lightspeed. I do not host Nightmare, although I did this week, because the person who hosts it, well, the way I put it on the podcast, his computer was out sick. God, I've been there.
You get those viruses, you know.
No, it's just he has an old laptop.
Yeah.
And there comes a point when you say, okay, please make this edit for me. And it goes, what's an edit? And no, I went through a point where I was using machines that, you know, like practically 386s cobbled together because my computer died and I was waiting. In those days, you had them built for you by a company like Dell or Gateway. And I had to wait 3 weeks till the new machine would come. And I put out an episode of Lightspeed a week and one Nightmare every 2 weeks. So 3 podcasts in 2 weeks. Ouch. A lot of work.
Yeah.
A lot of fun work. And I get the New York Review of Science Fiction readings, which I produce, and from you, we get the KGB Fantastic Fiction readings, which I guess it's fair to say you inherited from me.
I did, indeed.
For a while, you were actually nominally recording them for me. Yeah. Until
now it's more than nominal.
Yes. Well, yeah, but
I mean, they set up their own website as well.
The thing.
They can post it as well.
Yeah, but it was because I had been recording them. I don't know why. There are other reading series around the country. There's a good one in San Francisco, and Charlie Jane Anders runs Writers with Drinks, where, you know, you're not allowed to start reading until, like, your third stiff drink.
I'd like to try that one.
Oh, yeah, talk to her about it. She's guest of honor. And Heliosphere next year. Maybe we can work something out.
Okay.
And I've invited her. Anytime she wants to do that at New York Review of Science Fiction readings, I'll provide the beverages. And there are certain, very certain writers who I want to see knock one back and try to read. But my point was they don't record. I don't know why. But from the very first such reading series that I'm aware of that's specifically genre-based was New York Review of Science Fiction Reading, started by Gordon Van Gelder.
Right.
And before it began, about 2 weeks before it began, he called me up and asked if I was interested in recording and broadcasting the series. And we went through a number of curators until we were running low on them, and I just took it over.
Yep.
So that's the moment that the KGB series started, I guess about 10 years after the Nursef series began, I started recording those.
Yep.
But then, and this is how we can date how long you've been doing it, Hour of the Wolf used to be on Saturday mornings.
Right.
has moved to Wednesday nights. I do not care to do much on a Wednesday night before a radio show.
Right.
It would be possible for me, as it was for you, and Ellen Datlow has done it as well, to attend the reading, spend your energy there, and then come on the air here and be a guest. But I'll also point out you don't have to engineer and worry about the woes.
I also don't have anything to do till late tomorrow night, so.
Yeah, but so I had to, and knowing that you were able to record, I had to give up attending the KGB series.
And even those,
which is a shame because it's a great series.
I know. But even those few days, there's been a couple times where I wasn't available. I can give the recorder to Ellen or Matt, and they'll do it, and they'll give me the recorder back, and then I can...
Yeah, or worst case, call me. I mean, one time, two, you know, I can always cover it.
Yeah. No, but since it's easy enough just to give them the thing and just do it, they do it.
Fair enough. And they're good with microphones. I know Matt would be.
Ellen, I'll leave with Ellen, then Ellen will hand it to Matt.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah.
That will work.
Yeah.
No offense, Ellen, but Matt is a techie.
Yeah.
Matt is her computer.
Well, she knows that because she's, you know, when she has a problem with the computer, let me call Matt.
Well, I was her computer person before Matt.
Hi.
So there, but he. I think he made her become a Mac, didn't she? Hmm. I think she went to being a Mac. I had her as a PC. So, yep. Huh. Oh, okay, Cherie, you are so right. Cherie Renee Thomas requests that you do the talking instead of me. She, having been a curator of the Nursef readings, and co-host of this show on rare occasion. Okay. She knows me only too well.
Oh, yeah. I think we spoke earlier. I'm sure I was letting you guide it because when you called me, it was like, well, what do we do? We'll just chat. I do have a couple of promotional things I can talk about if you want.
You should.
Yeah, all right. In addition to the Baker Street, this book came out in January.
Corporate Cthulhu, yes.
Yes, you have to go online to see how to pronounce this properly.
Oh, I...
I
shouldn't talk more, but...
And I actually sponsored readings for the... Actually, I recorded the readings to promote this because this was a Kickstarter thing.
Ah, okay.
And this was just fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have my story is called It Came From IT.
I been there.
In which somebody, the trapezoidrin...
Yeah, John Ordover is saying hi to you, by the way.
Oh, hi there. I'm happy to say Crossroads Books is doing ebook versions of my two novels from the 60s, The Troop and The Oni.
Oh, cool.
The Troop is out now. The Oni will be out in another month or so.
Very good.
So I'll have access to that. I'm very pleased about that. Other than that, I've been trying to like get more writing done, spread it out more, and so on. And it's nice getting back to the whole thing. I've got like four novels floating around somewhere. Two of them on the computer. Two of them I found partial manuscripts. I really need to dig into my storage space.
Yes.
And see where the rest of these pages are.
Yeah. Yeah. You should put some of them into cloud storage. That way you can access them anywhere, and no matter what happens to your computer, you still have access.
Yeah, sure. As it is, I always put stuff on the thumb drive as well. So.
Yeah, but cloud storage is ubiquitous. Thumb drives die.
But then the aliens will see my work, and they'll come in after me.
There's, well, yeah, but the NSA gets to read it first. So, yes. You know.
Oh, sneaky NSA.
Well, they're not sneaky about it. They don't care who knows. That's the main thing.
Back when it was just the Bureau of Investigation, they had like three people on their staff. It's no wonder the German saboteurs got to take over so much.
What are you working on now?
Nothing really. I had a short story that I was working on it. I think I'm about to give it up now because it's not really gelling. I'll look at it for like a couple of hours. I'll change a paragraph. And then it's one of the old, because when I originally started.
Just stop hitting the table, by the way. Oh,
when I originally started. Put that in the way.
Yeah. Did you hear that? When you beat the table, it goes right into the mic.
Sorry about that. So, where was I? Oh, I was over here.
Yeah, now I think I'll move it over here.
Some of the earliest stuff I wrote back in the, since I was a teenager, was mostly sword and sorcery. And so this story was to try to get, you know, see if I could still do that. And it just wasn't quite working out. And frankly, there aren't that many markets for it anymore.
Really?
How much sword and sorcery do you see in the...
We get plenty at Lightspeed. We're publishing it. Clark's World has been doing it. Beneath Ceaseless Skies, to name three.
Lightspeed, every time I try to go on there, they were closed for submissions right now.
Yeah, well, they were open. Well, yeah, I mean, the amount of stuff. There's two stories a week. Yeah. And the... but that does make for eight stories a month. And every time the editor, John Joseph Adams, opens it up, there is a deluge. He has to hire, or at least cajole, any number of people into doing the readings. He gets an outpouring. But what does come through, there is actually a fairly... Jeremiah Tolbert is doing an ongoing sword and sorcery series, which is very clever, invoking some D&D, and he did it before Stranger Things was doing it. And I'm forgetting the name of another writer. Matthew Hughes did an entire Jack Vance-like sword and sorcery series that I just thought was excellent and often very witty. And they're all available, by the way, for free. So I'll say it at lightspeedmagazine.com. And when there are complete ongoing series, they get their own pages.
Right.
There. So, and people can hear them on the podcast. So there are markets, or at least there are editors willing to buy it. But you're right. Each of those three markets that I mentioned, Clark's World,
yeah,
Lightspeed, Nightmare, which is Nightspeed Dark, and Beneath Ceaseless Skies, they all do sword and sorcery.
Yeah, well, I was aiming for Beneath Ceaseless Skies, but it's, you know, until I finish the story, it's like, well, I'll take a look at it again.
Yeah, he's having his 10th anniversary shortly, and supposed to be opening the next season of the New York Review of Science Fiction readings with that, although that may not come through.
I mean, one of my big influences as a young writer was Fritz Leiber.
Yes.
Who wrote everything. He's the one that taught me you could write everything. Uh-huh. You can do sorcery, you can do straight science fiction, you can do humor.
Horror.
You could do detective stories. You can do everything.
Classic horror, like Conjure.
Classic
Wife.
Horror, yeah.
Which was turned into, what was the name of that movie? It was actually a pretty good movie. It takes place at a British university.
Conjure Witch?
No.
No.
The movie is called, I mean, the book is Conjure Wife.
Yeah.
The movie,
Conjure Wife,
I think,
was the book.
Yeah. I think the word witch is in the title of the movie.
That's what it's talking about. The movie had witch in the title.
Yeah, it does. You know what I mean?
And I was very happy that I did get to see him at a convention. We got in the elevator together. I got to say, like, tell him how he inspired me.
Burn, Witch, Burn.
Movie. Ah, yeah.
The movie of Conjure Wife is Burn, Witch, Burn. It's a very stupid title.
Yeah.
Which, oh, it was originally called Night of the Eagle, the movie. That makes more sense.
Yeah,
if you remember the context.
It's a better title, but I don't know who would sell it in a movie theater.
Well, it's a
19... I think it was like a war movie or something.
It's a 1962 movie. Mm-hmm. And therefore, they were living in the William Castle world of cinema.
Yeah.
Where we're living... I'm very happy in a different world now.
Yep.
Where, ooh, let's see. Upcoming movies and TV series include Nora Jemison and Nannetti. I hate saying her last name because I know I will mangle it. And Cherie Thomas is listening, so I dare not. I know what I'll do. I will cheat.
That's what the internet is for.
Okorafor. That's her name.
Okay.
And yes, HBO picked up her stuff. Okay, now you've got to admit, that's Rain.
I mean, that is definitely, yeah.
Yeah. It's either Rain or we're going to be really, really, really unhappy when we leave this building. I actually, with this coming down as is, we probably will be.
I was kind of hoping it would end in about 20 minutes.
Yeah, although, come to think of it, the weather forecast was accurate. They said shortly after 1 a.m., it's like, yep, wait for Jim to go on the air, and then just...
When I was looking at the forecast, it said like between 1 and 3, so...
Yeah. Well, it could be worse. We could be recording on the rooftop.
Yeah.
Could be which is something I have any intention of... I do have intention of doing. It's a lovely rooftop out there. Okay, so we're getting two questions... Okay. John Order wants to know why we're not talking about him. Well, there's a good reason for that. Let's see. And Joel, a listener, yeah. I'm going to leave it at that, John. Let you wonder what I'm talking about. Joel Schlossberg says, has anyone here seen the new Lost in Space? And the answer is yes for 20 minutes.
I have not seen it, but I've been reading some very good reviews.
Good reviews.
Very favorable, yeah.
I thought it sucked. I'll be blunt.
I have not seen it yet, so I can't say it one way or the other.
It's trying to capture the camp, but it doesn't quite do it. And Parker Posey, as Dr. Smith, doesn't come into it until later. And she's really the heart and soul. But... It just did not capture me. I think if it didn't have that title, or Space Family Robinson or something like that,
yeah.
I don't think too many people would be following it. I think they like the fact that it's got that title and it strikes a certain boomer nostalgia. And so some fan people are enjoying it for that reason. But couldn't get through the first episode.
In general, I wonder why the obsession with just, like, rebooting these series. Now, you could do something with the same format of filming in outer space without calling it Lost in Space.
Yeah. Well, exactly, but that's the thing. And there have been some excellent shows out there, new shows based on new properties. I just named two before, but there's also been Altered Carbon, based on a book by Richard Morgan.
I've been enjoying The Terror.
Haven't watched it at all yet.
Oh, yeah, you know, there's some gore, but it's not as blatant. You know, it's sudden and it's over.
Joel says, it's worse than the 1998 movie, The Lost in Space. No, nothing is worse than that movie.
That's exactly. That one.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that we can agree on.
Yeah. No, it isn't as bad. It may be watchable. I may give it another chance. What I may do is go to past the pilot of the series.
Because a lot of the reviews I did read say it starts off slow. So maybe it takes like an episode or two.
That could very well be. It has been in the past that I've watched certain shows, watched a pilot, thought, no, this is not for me, and then a year or two later come back to it, which is my favorite thing about streaming services, is that you can revisit these things.
Right.
and found, once you got past that awkward pilot with all the exposition, they had a really good show. And I may do that with Lost in Space. I may just skip to, like, episode 3, which is, I think, where Dr. Smith comes in.
One of the things that's been bothering about this whole pilot thing, used to be pilots were, this is what the show is going to be, and now pilots are simply like an origin story.
Okay.
So it's not really a pilot to give you an idea what the story is about.
Yes. John Ordover, by the way,
yeah,
says that the first half of the season dragged, but the second half was quite good. Actually, his taste in this stuff is pretty good. And I'm sorry, continue what you were saying.
I made the point that pilots are not really pilots anymore. They're origin stories.
They don't
give you a feel for the show.
Yeah, well, that depends. I mean, again, if you're talking about Legion, that pops you into the middle of madness.
Yeah.
The first episode there. In fact...
So in that one, it's not a pilot. It's the story is already on its way.
Yeah, it's been well established. And in fact, you spend most of season one decoding what the show is about.
You could say that about Mr. Robot, too.
Yes, one could. And both are cases... Ordover says, skip to episode 5 or 6. That's exactly what I will do. Thank you. Mr. Robot and Legion share in common the concept of the unreliable narrator.
Right.
And they both do it well. Mr. Robot really taking its cues from the movie Fight Club. But Legion is really its own.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no character in there that's reliable.
No.
And you don't know, with people switching bodies.
Yeah.
And stuff like that when...
Oh, I love I didn't see the one last night, but the one before where the woman that switches bodies, she's like, she's in the cat and she's sitting there like licking her hand. He has to talk to the cat.
That is a major plot point.
Yeah, could you go
in the next episode?
Yeah,
it's that she's. Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah, because nothing in that show happens by accident.
Mm-mm. That is correct. They tell these little parables. They have, blanking the actor's name, John Hamm.
Yeah,
telling parables in this season and. They all pay out, and they're little throwaway things, many of which I don't get, and people are going, oh, my God, that was Professor X's wheelchair.
Yeah.
But I think that it's quite possible that half the people who watch that show don't know who Professor X is.
And the point is it doesn't matter.
It doesn't. It's
little present for those that do.
Yeah.
But it doesn't interfere. Like, some shows will have, like, some fan service, but it interferes with the flow of the story.
Yeah, yeah.
Legion doesn't do that. The story is more important. Is that now, John again?
Yeah, there are a couple of things. If there's ever a TV show, The Phantoms, got to keep for those who came in late, quick intro. Yeah, that's true. And John says, pilots are now a scorecard. You're supposed to memorize in order to follow the rest of the show. I don't know, maybe. I didn't feel that way for some of the shows I've been watching. Moving out of science fiction, but staying in genre, Bosch doesn't require that.
Oh, yeah, they're starting up again in another week, right?
Started.
It started already, that's right.
Started.
I've got so many shows to watch, I'm losing track of which ones are starting.
I'm in episode 3 of season 4.
I'm still working on Unfortunate Series of Events.
Yeah, now there's a show that for some reason I saw it, I thought it was excellent, and I couldn't quite click into it. I don't know why. I loathed the movie, but that was because of Jim Carrey.
Yeah.
I love Neil Patrick Harris. And the premise of this version of the show with Lemony Snicket actually, somebody playing Lemony Snicket,
right,
actually being an on-camera narrator, that's fine. I love the form. But week after week of this, oh, my God, depressing kids show.
But that's that was the books.
Well, yeah, but I only read one of the books, and I read another Lemony Snicket book that I love, which is actually an illustrated short story called The Latke That Couldn't Stop Screaming. That's the title. What can I tell you? And that's the premise. That's the whole story right there. I think once you know the title, you've more or less figured it out. It's an applesauce title or a sour cream title or something like that. Yes, thank you very much. Somebody says a series of unfortunate events is too similar to time spent at WBAI.
It's just when you think it's going to all work out.
Yeah. Do you want to take a vocal call?
Sure.
Okay.
Let's see what a human being sounds like.
Good morning. You're on the air and supposedly human.
Nope. Perhaps not.
And on that note, they hung up on me.
Huh. How dare you call me human?
Yeah, but yes, exactly. If you would like to call up and speak with Gordon Linsner, the telephone number is 347-335-0818, a phone number that I find so counterintuitive that I can never begin. I remember phone numbers from BAI from 51 years ago. I'm not exaggerating. I used to answer those phones 51 years ago. It's what I did. Giving me the right to say, for the better part of a century.
I remember phone numbers when it was like Bigelow 4, 6792.
Oh, these were Oxford 7 exchanges.
Yeah.
These were all Oxford 7 da-da-da-da. So, good morning, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hey there, you're on.
Yeah, I'm Tom from the Bronx here.
Hey, Tom.
Yeah, I'd like to say this. Lost in Space, the movie that came out,
yeah,
really was horrible. And Jonathan Harris had said, how can you have a motion picture, Lost in Space, without Dr. Smith? In other words, he was that program. He stole the show to me.
Yes,
definitely yes.
He was the best thing in the show.
Oh, he was the best thing. But you know what? The other actors and the actresses ganged up on him and said, no, you can't have any more of the spotlight. And it was that kind of program where it was more like characters.
I think you're overestimating the powers of actors and actresses.
Well, no. But no, I've read that years ago.
Yeah, but I'm.
They actually ganged up on him, and they gave Jonathan Smith less parts in there. Coming to the end, I mean.
Well. Yeah.
Coming to the end of the program.
Yeah, I just have to apologize to the Facebook listeners who say that they can't hear the caller. Yes, that is true. We don't have a way of plugging in the call.
So we have to
Facebook.
Repeat what he says so they'll know we're being...
But our caller is saying that the actors and actresses of the TV series Lost in Space, that would be Guy Williams, Billy Mumy, June Lockhart... Yeah. We're ganging up on Jonathan Harris saying you're stealing the show. And I have been peripherally involved, that is to say, I worked at talent agencies, actors, unless they are stars, they don't have that power.
Yeah, anyway, that's what I've read. But anyway, I'd just like to say this. The best character to play Dr. Smith would have been... Your own personalities on WBAI, your uncle,
Steve Post.
Uncle,
are you going to say?
When Steve Post is a Dr. Smith
To play what was the character who was on the WBAI? Uncle
Al Lewis.
No. I'm thinking of Uncle.
Can't really see.
We had only two people called themselves Uncle, and they were Uncle Steve Post and he never called himself Uncle Steve, but others did. And Sidney Smith.
Sidney Smith. Sidney.
Oh, Sidney. Uncle Sidney. No, I'm sorry. Sidney is too much of a teddy bear to be
Dr.
Smith.
No, but to Smith. Me, no, he, no, his vocabulary was excellent.
Oh, yes.
And, in other words, and to me, Harris had an excellent vocabulary. He was a Shakespearean actor originally.
So yeah. You say Harris didn't have the Shakespeare had the Shakespearean chops that the Parker Posey doesn't, perhaps?
Yeah, or? I mean, actually, Parker Posey is getting great reviews as Dr. Smith. She's the one thing in the show that most people seem to like.
Well, I didn't even know it was around, but anyway,
it's around. That's why we're discussing it.
Yeah,
I think he's just referring to the movie itself.
That's the first time I heard of it. I don't have a TV here anyway.
Uh huh.
But what I'm saying is that, to me, Uncle Sidney would have been perfect, and you had the gentleman that Uncle Sidney always talked to was another one that was an excellent vocabulary. In fact, one time I wrote the station.
Well, having a good vocabulary does not make one a good character for television.
No, but the voice was perfect to me. I wrote Uncle Sidney one
time.
Well,
I'll tell you the WBAI personnel who would have had the best voice of all for it John Lithgow.
I never heard him.
John Lithgow is an Academy Award-winning, Tony Award-winning, et cetera, award-winning actor.
Yeah,
but we need to get off.
How do you not know John Lithgow?
Yeah, John Lithgow is one of the most famous actors in the world, and he was arts director here at WBAI. But
I try to get Uncle Sidney.
Okay, well, when I say we have to get off, I mean our time is up. Yes. The show is over.
All right, bye.
Okay, take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you for having me on the show, Jim. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. So, Gordon, what do you currently have? John Orver thinks I should be Dr. Smith. Yes, very good, John. We've got a role for you to play as well. Where do people find you online or your work or stuff like that? Space and Time magazine, you're still present there.
Yeah, I mean, Hildy has a website for Space and Time, and I have a Facebook page.
Okay.
I don't have a web page because I don't do that much.
And you don't currently have any books in print or anything like that?
No, The Troop is now available as an e-book.
Ah, okay.
The Oni will be available again soon.
And where can people find that?
Crossroads Press.
Okay, very good.
Just go online and you'll find they've got all kinds of reprints from other writers as well.
Yes, so but this morning we're concerned with Gordon Lindsner.
Yes.
Thank you so much for being here. It's been too long.
Thank you.
We'll do it again.
We must do it more often.
Yes, indeed. Next week our guest will be Scott Edelman. Week after that, Chris Claremont. And that will also be fundraising time. Be warned. This has been Hour of the Wolf. My name is Jim Freund. Thank you so much for listening. You can find me on Facebook as well in the Hour of the Wolf group or on my own page. Hourwolf.com does exist but hobbles along as a 1990s website. Write me, jim@hourwolf.com. Stay tuned for Burn Baby Burn Clapper with Lister, coming your way very shortly. Have a good morning. Thank you for listening. And to those of you who are watching, for watching, take good care. Oh, yes, be good to each other.
when I leave, you can remember I said with the last words on my lips, I am a revolutionary. And you're going to have to keep on saying that. You're going to have to say that I am a proletarian. I am
a revolutionary. The red, white, and blue spit on you.
Trying to reach my freedom of speech and expressing myself, torturing the symbol of oppression. Let that be a lesson to those that want suppression of the truth. Put on hold, the bold lose control, so they force obedience. Have you pledge allegiance to a piece of cloth that's off the way I see it? Well, I'm going off berserk, cause the system work to jerk. My people, the people, all around the pigs work. Tell me I'm wrong, though that's my right, and it's right in the Constitution. Yo, that's an illusion, huh? Suckers trying to change and rearrange. They say that I'm free, but they sure have a strange way of showing it. But I'm blowing the cover.
Just a mother minute. You gave me freedom of speech in the fucking. the flag. I'm only doing what you told me. You don't like it, so what? I'm not scared of you. Your flag, America too. See, I made up this new rule and I want y'all to learn it. Strike a match to the American flag and burn.
Yeah, 99.5 FM, listed live right here on the radio, your favorite radio station, right here at exactly 6 minutes after 3 o'clock. This is a show where we burn the imperialist red, white, and blue to ashes with no apologies. Yeah, and if it won't burn, we dip it in acid, y'all. 99 single, listed live. Burn, baby, burn. Until 5 o'clock this morning, 6 o'clock, a brand new show right here. The best of the best of the best, Michael G at the controls right here at 99.5 FM. WBAI, Pacifica Radio at its very best. Yeah, where we won't fall down. Yeah. I'm feeling you this morning politically, just like Obama Bay can feel the plight of the masses in the imperialist red, white, and blue capitalist blood-sucking America.
Killing my feet, so if you take my wish, you will reside in a corner alone. You will be done with a taste of your own. I won't fall down. Killing my knees, so if you take my soul, you will be killed with the strength of my heart. You will be thrown in the darkest hole. I won't fall down. Killing my hands, so if you take my breath, you will survive in the deepest sea. You will cry for the sake of your pain. I won't fall down. Into the light we walk, blessing our tears. Into the walls we build, leaving our fears. Into the breath we feel, life we heal. Into the breath we feel, life we heal. Yeah.
yeah. 99.5 FM, list alive, right on your radio right here at 12 minutes after 3 o'clock. 12 minutes after 3 o'clock. Yeah. 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 You won't fall down as long as we join hands and overthrow this capitalist blood-sucking system permanently so we don't go back to this. Pressure drop system. Yeah. Toronto, Canada. This is You Know Who. Yep. It's Lista.